Barnhart Glass, and you are listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me. It's July 25th, 2012. And if you have been listening to me on a reasonably regular basis, you know that I've been in California, and I just got back to New York this morning. I was traveling on a red-eye flight, and it's always a surreal experience after being somewhere for 3 weeks or so and then coming back to a place that you're very familiar with. But I'm really glad that the weather here is quite pleasant, because when I left, it was quite horrible. And, yeah, so I'm back here in New York, and I got here early in the morning and really tired because it was on a red eye. And so the first thing I did was make myself one of these great fruit smoothies with some green powder and all kinds of wonderful healthy food to get me a little energized. And this is my story for the day. I don't know what motivated me or didn't motivate me, but I didn't put the cover on the blender, and a whole bunch of purpley dark goo splattered all over the place, and I cleaned it up, and then I did it a second time. And then finally there was some left, and I had my smoothie. And then just before starting the show, I thought I'd make myself a cup of mate, and I don't know what motivated me, but I looked up on the ceiling, and I don't know how it got there, but a lot of what was in the blender was now on the ceiling. It would have made Jackson Pollock proud. That's what happens when you don't get enough sleep. Sleep is so important. And if you're wondering why you're tired, one of the first things I like to ask is, have you been getting enough rest? And I hope you have. And I'll get some later. I'll be fine. And I wanted to remind you before we get on with our first guest that I have a nonprofit called Responsible Eating and Living, and my website is responsibleeatingandliving.com. I do another podcast called Ask a Vegan, and I just did my 100th episode last Sunday, and I wanted to let you know because it was a really fun show. You might want to check it out. I interviewed a 13-year-old boy who was quite interesting and articulate. So you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, go to the Real Radio tab, and you can see the It's All About Food archive, which has all of my 158 shows and counting, and the Ask a Vegan archive as well. So check them out. Okay, one of the things I like to do about this show, you know, I love talking about food, and it's all about food, and I have an agenda, and that is to help people eat more plant foods because it's so important for the planet. And I think the most effective way to do it is to tell stories. And I like people to come on and tell their stories. So we're going to hear a bunch of stories today and hear about food. And the first guest is Christy Morgan, and she's a vegan macrobiotic chef. She offers environmentally conscious eaters a variety of easy, palate-pleasing, healthy, and environmentally friendly recipes in her cookbook, Blissful Bites, vegan meals that nourish mind, body, and planet. Also known as The Blissful Chef, with a website, theblissfulchef.com, Morgan helps home cooks make healthy, delicious meals with seasonal produce, many of which cater to raw and gluten-free diets. Welcome to It's All About Food, Christy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, you sound like you do everything that is really important to me. Making vegan meals that nourish the mind, body, and planet. That's all there is. It's all about food, and that's what it's about. Now, what is your story, in brief? How is it that you became inspired to make vegan meals and share them with the world?
Well, I moved to Los Angeles after college, and I went vegan after watching this really graphic video on animal food production.
Which one was that?
So, Meet Your Meat.
Meet Your Meat, yeah, that's a good one, or a bad one, yeah.
And I went vegan overnight.
Yeah.
And so it's a whole new way of cooking and looking at food, so I had to teach myself. This was 10 years ago almost. And back then there wasn't really a huge amount of vegan restaurants or vegan products, so I had to teach myself how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I met up with other vegans in the vegan community and went to potlucks and started cooking for other people, and I just really loved it. And so I decided to go to culinary school.
Oh, good for you. Where did you go?
And I went to a macrobiotic natural foods cooking school in Austin called the Natural Epicurean.
Okay. Were they supportive of a vegan diet?
Yeah, it was macrobiotic, so it was mostly vegan.
Mm-hmm, great.
And now the program actually is vegetarian, vegan, macrobiotic, and Ayurvedic and raw foods. The program has expanded to include all kinds of plant-based movement.
Austin is a pretty hip community. I know Whole Foods started there, and for Texas, it's probably pretty evolved for the rest of the community, surrounding community.
Yes, people are very conscious of their food choices and environmental choices. People, lots of people bicycle and are into outdoor sports. It's a great town.
Yeah. And I noticed in the beginning of your book, one of the things I wanted to mention is that the vegan world is really a community. And I don't know how to explain this exactly, but a lot of us are on a mission, just like the title of your book, the subtitle, Vegan Meals That Nourish Mind, Body, and Planet. We have a mission. We want to make this world a better place. We want people to be happy and healthy. We want the planet to be clean and healthy for generations to come. And as a result, vegan chefs tend to be part of a big community. And I noticed in the beginning of your book you have a number of comments, testimonials, or support for your book, and it's a number of other vegan chefs in the movement, and it's really nice to see that they all come out to support each other.
Yes, it's very supportive, especially anytime you go to a new city, you basically just Google vegan in your city, and you will have a wealth of people waiting with open arms.
Yeah, and thanks to the internet for that. I think that's what's really helped our mission. The internet.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really helped just educate people on, because there's just these old school myths and old school knowledge of nutrition and how nutrition works, and we're really stepping away from that, and people are their eyes are being opened to the fact that, you know, dairy isn't really that good for you. It really is causing all this inflammation and all these issues that you may be having, or maybe you should just check it out. And we're just opening our minds, and through the internet all these people are writing articles and just educating each other. So it's really amazing.
And it doesn't help that every week we hear about more and more celebrities that are going vegan.
Yeah, I mean that doesn't hurt for sure.
Yeah.
I don't like to look at celebrities necessarily, because I mean they're people too. They're going to make mistakes, and then they get more publicity on the mistakes they make sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
but it definitely helps to get veganism and vegan eating and.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are afraid. They're afraid of change. And when more people are doing something, it makes it seem more okay to many people. And
yeah, it's normal. It's not weird anymore.
It's not weird anymore. No. Okay, now there are lots of different vegan diets, and that's something that really surprises people when I talk about vegan diets, because there are many kinds. And there are some unhealthy vegan diets, and there are some that are healthier, and then there are just different kinds, and science hasn't told us if one is better than the other. There's just a range of different ones, and macrobiotic is one of them. Now, why is it that you decided to focus on the macrobiotic style?
Well, macrobiotic inherently is not vegan. The vegan diet, it means specifically to exclude animal foods from your diet and try to reduce harm to animals as far as entertainment, clothing, animal testing, all of that. So being vegan really isn't just a diet. It includes all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So some like raw foods and some other kind of things that look vegan are vegan just in the diet. They don't necessarily include all of the ethics that go behind the vegan diet. So I just want to clarify that.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
good.
Macrobiotics is actually not inherently vegan. A lot of people who study macrobiotics eat fish, and some
right.
of them eat other animal foods because it's not a one-size-fits-all diet.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea what it meant before, what the word meant, until I went to that culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had no idea, but I feel really blessed that I did go to that culinary school and I learned about it because it taught me more of a whole foods diet. It taught me more of a holistic view on health. So it's not just about the food. It was about how it affects the planet, how it affects your organs, your mood, everything about you, your relationships with others. Food is more than just fuel to nourish us. It is everything to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is.
So that's what that taught me, and it taught me about balance. It taught me about eating in season. It taught me about organic foods. So I really feel blessed that I was, because I learned how to cook in the natural foods way. I never learned how to cook junk food. I never became a vegan that was a junk food vegan because I was exposed to all of this wonderful whole foods.
Yeah, that's lucky. You know, I've been doing this for decades, and it's been a long journey of learning and ultimately coming to a very, very clean whole food place.
And that's what I try to share with even vegans, because it's vegan doesn't mean it's healthy. So my mission is to help everyone, but especially help vegans to actually learn to cook and eat whole foods, because it's so easy these days just to buy packaged food or buy tofurkey dogs, and while that stuff is delicious, you don't want to make that all of your diet, right?
You know, you said that what moved you toward to the vegan diet was watching a video, Meet Your Meat, and if people aren't familiar with that video, it's put out by PETA, and it has some very difficult-to-watch scenes of animals in factory farms. And that's what moved me to this diet, the pain and suffering of animals that I don't want to support. And so many people see videos like that and decide they're not going to eat animals anymore, and they end up eating a diet that isn't healthy. And I'm with you, Christy, because personally, I used to say vegan was a lifestyle, but now after an interview I had a few weeks ago with Gary Steiner, I'm now saying it's a moral imperative, the vegan diet. It's more than a lifestyle. It's a moral imperative because what we're doing to our planet, the environment, animals, and our own health, we need to change the way we eat. And it's important to me for all people that are promoting a plant diet to look good and feel healthy and look healthy, because we are our own marketing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a touchy subject, which I've talked about before on my own blog and with other people. It's a tricky subject because just going vegan does not mean you're going to get healthy, does not necessarily mean you're going to lose a ton of weight and you're just going to transform your whole life. It can happen. It happens for many people, but there's a fine line that we have to walk between promoting veganism for vanity and promoting it for health and for the health of the planet and the animals. So it's so much more than just food, obviously, and a lot of people do go into it because they think it's going to help them, but I really hope that people dive deeper than that and mm-hmm. they experience the true compassion that comes from, you know, not eating animals. And
well, we're all on our own path, and or the range of how deep we're going to go, or at the pace of how deep we're going to go, is really an individual thing. But
of course.
Yeah. But I believe that first eliminating animal foods from the diet and knowing that you can survive without eating animals really opens a crack into a whole nother world, and then you can go deeper, you can learn more. It's first knowing that we don't need animals to live.
Yeah, and that's a pretty big battle for people in itself. So,
big battle.
Yeah, I applaud anybody who takes any steps to reduce the harm that they do and the animal foods that they eat. You know, I think it's important that we are flexible and understanding with people and support people on their journeys, because really, everybody's not going to go vegan overnight, at least not tomorrow. So if we can get people to make small steps, those accumulative small steps really become a massive tipping point. And
yeah,
that's what we need right now. Like, we have, in order to save ourselves and the planet, we really need to end factory farming. It's so detrimental to the planet and to our health. We all know that, right?
So yeah.
I support anybody who makes any steps, like meatless Mondays, vegan till 6, whatever you want to do, just do something, right?
There is momentum definitely happening, and more people know the word vegan and they're more open to it. It's not a foreign word anymore. We hear about it in movies and in media, and everybody knows people who are vegan, and so there's this momentum going on, which is great. But at the same time, there are other movements happening as well that are counter to what's happening in the vegan movement. There's so much promotion of eating pork and bacon and ham, and making it trendy and hip. And so,
and gourmet foodie, yeah.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, I just remember I was just thumbing through Prevention magazine. I haven't looked at it in so long, and they showed two different recipes. One had bacon and one had ham with some fruits and vegetables. And I'm thinking, come on, this is 2012. You still don't get it? But
yeah,
there we are. But you have, I wanted to mention in your book, one of the things that I really like to do, and I'm glad to see that you have a recipe for it, is tempeh bacon.
Yeah, that's one of my most popular recipes, actually.
Yeah.
And people can find that on my website as well.
Oh, that's good. Now, you can buy it in the store, but what I like about making it at home is you can really adjust the flavors to the way you like it. I don't like using a lot of salt, and the tempeh bacon in the stores is really salty for my palate.
Yeah, it is.
And but making tempeh bacon, it's so good. And tempeh is such a great food.
I love tempeh.
Tempeh, they use a lot of tempeh in macrobiotic cooking, don't they?
Yep. That's where I learned about it, in culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
So I would choose tempeh over tofu any day.
Well, what's great about tempeh is it's a more of a whole food, because tofu is more processed. Tofu is just curdled, the juice from the soybeans, pressed out of the soybeans. It lacks fiber, and then it's curdled and made into a cheese. But tempeh is the whole bean fermented, which makes it more easy to digest.
Exactly.
And it has a nice flavor. I'm not exactly sure why this is, but I find people either like tempeh or they don't like it.
Yeah, that's what I find too in my cooking classes. But thankfully, every time I do a class with tempeh, there's at least one person in the class that says, I hate tempeh, I can't stand it, but I like yours.
Oh,
what's
your secret?
Somehow I've created tempeh dishes that actually turn people on to tempeh. But I've had people say that about other things. Like, people come in and they're like, I hate Brussels sprouts. But then they have mine, and they like it. So.
Well, I think that's great. I think one of the important things with tempeh, especially for people that don't naturally like that fermented, mushroomy, nutty kind of flavor that it has, is to marinate it in something. And it's so good with a variety of marinades. And plus, I think it's good, too, to hydrate it a little bit. It makes it moist and chewier. It gives it a nicer texture. That's what I like to do with tempeh.
Yeah, you should try my tempeh bacon.
Okay. Definitely will. And, you know, there are so many things you can do with tempeh bacon. You can have a BLT and just so many different things. And probably you could put it on ice cream, just like they're doing at Burger King, right? Did you hear about that?
No.
Oh, gosh, they're putting these bacon bits on ice cream as a new Sunday sensation. It's like, really?
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah, but but maybe tempeh on a coconut banana frozen ice cream or something. Who knows? Maybe your next book.
Okay, you're giving me some ideas.
And another thing is you have one of my favorite quotes in here by Joseph Campbell, follow your bliss and the universe will open doors where there were only walls. And this is so profound. And this is really one of the wonderful things about this diet, this lifestyle, this moral imperative. There are so many things that are going wrong in this world today, and this is such a wonderful, joyful, delicious thing that you can do that's right, that makes a difference.
Yeah, that's why it's called Blissful Diet. That's why I'm called Blissful Chef, because eating this way really does make me feel bliss, and it makes me feel so good every day that I can live my true self and my compassion with everything that I do. People don't realize how important it is to eat this way because it's something you do the most. Like, we sleep and we eat. That's what we do the most. And you can make the most profound difference with your fork. And people think, oh, it's just food. Like, I just need to feed myself so that I can have energy to work all the time or something. But it's like, no, it's much deeper than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, once you come over to our side, you'll see how blissful it really is.
Exactly.
Now, did you have any specific physical changes when you transitioned your diet?
Well, I started when I was really young. I was right out of college when I started. So I didn't have any health issues. A lot of people go to this diet because of health issues.
Yeah.
I didn't really have any because I was young.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have noticed is that over the years, I keep getting healthier and more fit and younger as I age, which is totally the opposite of what most people do. Most people who eat a standard American diet, they degrade as they age.
That's right.
I stopped aging. Like, I'm in better shape. Like, I've become an athlete now later in life, and I'm in better shape than I was when I was in college when I was an athlete.
Then what are you doing now? What kind of sports?
I can do more with my body now, and I can work out harder and longer and have super quick recovery times where there is no recovery time. I can just keep going. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I do everything. Like, I love being active. I do Zumba. I do kickboxing. I lift weights. I run. I did my first triathlon last year.
Woo!
In September. And
okay.
I'm doing the Tough Mudder in October, which is one of the hardest obstacle races in the country.
Oh, good for you.
So it's, like, so exciting to, like, I'm like, hey, I can be an athlete now and on a vegan diet. And so I love going to the gym, like, wearing vegan shirts and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really
so
clever advertising. Right. This is my secret, folks. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because in the next part of this show, I'm going to be talking to Rich Roll. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's this amazing god who in his 40s just started doing ultra marathons and all kinds of crazy physical stuff, and he does it on plant foods.
I know, he's amazing. I love Rich Roll.
Yeah.
But there's so many amazing vegan athletes, and they're all so inspirational. And whenever I meet people at the gym who tell me about their diets, I'm like, you really should look up Robert Cheek and, you know, Scott Turek and
Brendan Brazier. Mm-hmm.
And Brendan Brazier, because there's so many amazing athletes. Though there isn't a lot of females that are that popular, so I need to. Annie Pio she's amazing and she's a great athlete. But we need to get some more females up in there in, like, the spotlight.
Okay, well, you're training, so, you know, maybe you'll have to be one of them.
I'm not training enough, I don't think, but, yeah. I like to talk to people about fitness, for sure.
It's very important to exercise. It's not just the food. You have to work your bodies. And we've just got ourselves in this crazy lifestyle of eating all the wrong foods and sitting in an office and then coming home and sitting and watching television. And it's all about convenience. And it's not healthy. We need to move, move, move. We need to be making things. We need to be moving our bodies. And I just hope that we get there. But you're helping to do that with your very lovely Blissful Bites.
Thank you.
I know that you've starred a bunch of your favorite recipes in here. Just before we go, do you want to mention any one in particular to whet our appetite?
People always ask me this, and I just love food so much, it's hard for me to pick. That's why I actually put those chef and fan favorite stars in there so
mm-hmm.
people could look. But really, I just love breakfast food and brunch food.
Mm.
I love it. Like, I'm working on my next book, and that chapter is like three times the size of the other chapters. I'm going to have to tear it down. I don't know what it is. I love breakfast food. I love, you know, tofu scramble, and I make a really good tofu scramble. I love pancakes. I love all that.
Yeah, it's cozy. It's comforting, and it's the best way to start your day is with some really good food in your belly.
And I actually eat smooth. I have a huge green smoothie every morning, and that's what I have for breakfast normally, but I do love to splurge and make brunch for other people.
Yeah, I think maybe weekends or for some particular festive time, I love taking out the pancakes or the waffle iron and making a really satisfying, great breakfast. I think breakfast does it for me, too. So I just wanted to thank you for speaking with me today, Christy, and best of luck to you with Blissful Bites. Well, I can't say it, Blissful Bites. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thanks for having me. Nice talking with you.
Okay. I'm Karen Hartklesh. Bye-bye. You're listening to It's All About Food, and we're going to take a quick break and stay with us because I'm going to be talking to Rich Roll and his book, Finding Ultra. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Karen Hartklesh. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me, and it's time for part two of today's show, July 25th, 2012, and I am going to bring on my next guest, Rich Roll. He has been featured on CNN and has been named one of the world's 25 fittest men by Men's Fitness Magazine. He is a graduate of Stanford University and Cornell Law School. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife and four children, and when he isn't training or competing, manages the entertainment boutique independent law group, LLP. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, gosh. I am so excited to talk to you today. And I'm sorry I didn't miss you when you were here in New York for the Seed experience a month ago or so. Because
that was a great experience.
I just have a feeling, just from reading your book, there's a lot of energy that comes out of here. And I'm sure that it just being in your presence, you get all charged up. So I'm sorry I missed that experience.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah. You have an amazing story, and I'm really glad you're sharing it with people. People love to hear stories, individual stories, especially when people have gone far into the dark and then come out into the light like you have. People love those stories, and they really help the rest of us in on our own personal journeys, and it's pretty amazing.
Oh, well, thank you.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, and who knows what else will happen in this half hour. Now, the thing that I have just a thread of your story, not too much, just enough to tease. And then I want to ask you some questions.
Yeah, sure. I started out as I was an athlete in college. I was a swimmer at Stanford back in the 80s. But when my swimming career ended, so did sort of all of my interest in health and fitness. And my life just became about you know, moving up the corporate ladder and getting married and showing up for the boss and paying the mortgage and all that kind of stuff. And during that period of time, I really lost sight of my wellness. And, you know, I gained a bunch of weight. I gained 50 pounds. And more importantly, I just felt horrible. My energy levels were terrible. I was depressed. I was essentially a couch potato. And it took a little bit of a health scare for me to take an honest look in the mirror and realize that I had to make some significant changes in the way that I live my life.
I'm always wondering how to get people interested in eating a healthy diet, because for me, it's a moral imperative for people to eat plants. It's horrific what's going on with factory farming today, the treatment of animals. We're devastating the environment, and people's health is just deteriorating so quickly, and it's expensive, and I just don't like people to suffer. But it's really hard to get that message across, and I think you have some insight as to what some of those things are that keep people from doing the right things, because you did have a bout with alcoholism, and then you had the issue with food.
Sure.
What is it?
Well, I think that you know, for most people, myself included, you know, pain is really the only true motivator. You know, it's really the only thing that's ever gotten me to change any of my errant behaviors. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, you don't have to be suffer the depths of alcoholism to realize that, you know, drinking too much is bad for you and you probably shouldn't do it. And you don't have to, you know, put on a ton of weight or suffer a heart attack to, you know, realize that maybe you should think twice about what you're putting down your throat. Unfortunately, for most people, you know, it takes that kind of severe consequence in order for them to change. And it's unfortunate. I mean, it's part of the human condition, I suppose. But, you know, if anything, I'm trying to, you know, promote this idea that, you know, you don't have to suffer like I did or like so many people did do in order to, you know, implement some simple changes that could, you know, actually make you feel better and help, you know, avoid the onset of all these congenital diseases that we're suddenly experiencing in, you know, gigantic numbers with no end in sight.
I like to think that changing your diet is really not a difficult thing, but there's something in our mind that makes it difficult. And you mentioned a few things that I kind of highlighted to myself. Change your perception, change your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also talk about fear. And most people have some sort of fear that really takes control of their life and makes change so difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at, you know, change your perception, change your reality, I mean, we have this sort of very firm perspective that eating healthy is difficult, it's expensive, and it comes at the cost of flavor and taste and all of these things that we've grown accustomed to. And, you know, changing your perception means realizing or embracing the idea that none of those things have to be true. It doesn't have to be more expensive. It doesn't have to be more time-consuming. And it doesn't have to come at the cost of sacrificing flavor and taste. There are some adjustments, of course, that comes with, you know, changing your palate to, you know, suit new foods or whatever. But, you know, I've realized, you know, over the last 5 years of doing this that I don't miss any of the foods I used to eat, and I actually relish the healthy foods in a way that I never would have thought possible. But, you know, it all starts with a decision and a willingness and an open-mindedness to try something new and set aside those fears or those preconceptions and step into it.
You know, reading your book, and it's amazing, and you write really well, and it was just very, it was hard to put it down. I wanted to get to the end. In some ways, it was exhausting just going through, riding up and down those hills and doing those laps and running. I mean, number one, you do things that most people would never even dream of attempting. Just amazing physical feats. And then on top of it, you did it on plant foods. And this is
right.
What many of us are so excited about because, well, you have a little paragraph in here where people ask questions. Aren't you anemic? What you're doing is dangerous. How can you stand all that bland food? You can't be an athlete without steak and milk. It's impossible to build muscle without animal protein. You can't get enough calories without meat and dairy. I've never seen a vegan who looks healthy. You're missing key nutrients. You're harming yourself. Man evolved to eat animals. It's not natural. I mean, you just say it all right there, and I've heard that a million times, and you probably have too, but you've proved them all wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, it goes back to all of these misconceptions, many of which are perpetrated by very powerful, you know, milk and dairy lobbies and the conglomerates of the food industry that want you to believe that you need certain food products in order to live and be healthy. And so many of those turn out to be inaccurate and downright misleading in cases. And you know, it's an amazing time right now because plant-based nutrition has never been sort of more popular and in the forefront of people's minds. And when you see people like Bill Clinton and, you know, prominent business people realizing the health benefits of eating this way, it's making a profound impact on our cultural zeitgeist. And you know, for me as an athlete, what's great about that is, you know, I let the results of these crazy endurance events speak for themselves. So instead of preaching to people, you should do this or you shouldn't do that, I try to just relate my experience, you know, what's worked for me. And I let the results of the athletic accomplishments, you know, establish and speak for me that not only is this possible, it's, you know, it's doable.
Now, some of the people that have said all of these things that I read just momentarily, moments ago, have you changed their minds? Have a lot of athletes you've worked with or crossed paths with been impressed with what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are a lot of athletes now that are starting to experiment with this and realizing incredible performance gains, and not just in the endurance sports arena. You're seeing an amazing trend amongst the MMA fighters, the UFC guys. Plant-based nutrition is like all the rage in that sport right now. And, you know, when you talk about the sort of masculinity issues of being vegan and not eating meat and what that means to your manlyhood, I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched the UFC fight, but these guys are just absolute barbarians. I mean, there's nobody more masculine or vicious than these guys. And the fact that they're, you know, beating each other up on, you know, kale and spinach is kind of amazing. And even recently, you know, Arian Foster, who's a very, very prominent running back in the NFL for Houston, has adopted a vegan diet, and it's caused quite a stir amongst the sort of mainstream sports media, you know, the ESPN pundits and the like, and everybody's sort of watching closely to see how that's going to play out. So you're seeing it more and more. You know, it used to just be the crazy ultra runners and the like, but it's really spilled over into many mainstream sports, and it's really exciting to watch.
Okay, so this isn't exactly related to food per se, but you've talked in your book about when you're trying to achieve some incredible endurance feat, that you get to a place where you just let go and let things happen. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's really profound and people could learn a lot from it.
Yeah, I mean, I used to harbor this idea that the only way that I could succeed in the world was directly related to how much I could impose my will on a certain situation. And as a youth, I experienced some success by, you know, working harder than other people, et cetera. But, you know, what I learned through my bout with alcoholism is the power of surrender and the power of letting go of conditions, situations, and people that you don't have any control over. And it's a very powerful sort of counterintuitive notion that took me a long time to grasp, but which has, you know, come to play a huge part in how I live my life and how I pursue my sport. And in endurance sports, particularly, and I guess in any sport, there are only so many things you have control over. You know, you have control over your training, you have control over what you put down your throat, and you have control over how much, you know, energy you exert in a race, et cetera, but you don't have control over your competitors. You don't have control over the weather and all these sorts of things that, cause anxiety, you know, and cause us to waste precious energy and resources on worry and,
on
and,
worry.
And the like
mm-hmm.
that really don't serve us. So, you know, I think that at the highest level of any sport, all the athletes are incredibly talented, and they're all training very hard, you know, probably doing very similar things. So what distinguishes the gold medalist from the also-ran? And I think, you know, more often than not, it boils down to how much domain that person has over their mental attitude. What is their, you know, mental construct over their event and their, you know, their personal well-being? And people that have better domain over their thoughts are generally going to be more successful in sport and in life, I've found.
Yep, absolutely. That voice that we hear, all those voices that we hear, we need to turn them off and just be, or let our consciousness just do what it's supposed to do. Shut that.
And to realize off. That there's a distinction between who you are and how you feel and what your thoughts are. You know, it's creating a dividing line between the thoughts that creep into your head and who you actually are as a person, and choosing which messages that pop into your head you're going to listen to and which ones you're going to dismiss.
Now, here was something I was reading in your book. When you decided to go vegetarian and then vegan, it was because you were overweight, you were lethargic, you weren't feeling well, you climbed the stairs, you were out of breath. But what made you choose a vegetarian and then a vegan diet? Had you seen people on these diets that you thought might be helpful?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, I wish I could tell you that, you know, I went to the library and checked out a bunch of books and watched a bunch of documentaries and came to this sort of well-reasoned conclusion that this would be the best route for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not at all what happened. I mean, I really fell into it in a very kind of accidental, organic fashion by just experimenting on my own and not initially knowing what I was doing at all. And, you know, I originally thought, well, I'll try a vegetarian diet, and the reason for that is that it seemed very black and white to me, and that's what I needed. Like, I needed something I could wrap my brain around that seemed doable. And
but
you
must have known some people that were vegetarian that
yeah, I did,
might have left
I
an impression on you.
Yeah, I didn't. I was just looking for some change that I could implement that seemed simple and almost mathematic. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's really informed by my experience in addiction recovery. It's like you're either drinking and using drugs or you're not. You know, there's no middle ground, right? And so with vegetarianism, it was like, all right, well, you're either eat or you're not. And I could, like, conceptualize that much better than just saying, well, I'm going to eat better, you know, because that didn't carry any meaning for me. So, of course, I, you know, without undertaking any proper education about it, it wasn't long before, you know, I was basically just eating vegetarian, you know, unhealthy vegetarian foods like Domino's pizza and French fries, and trying to convince myself that was healthy when, of course, it's not. So, it, you know, after several months of doing that and, you know, of course, not losing any weight and not feeling any better, I was ready to bag it completely when I thought, well, I wonder what would happen if I took it one step further and got rid of the dairy and got rid of the processed foods. And I did it almost as a dare to my wife to prove that it wouldn't make any difference. So the joke was on me when, you know, a week later I felt amazing. And that's when I realized there was something going on and that I should probably undertake a little study to learn more.
Yeah, that's funny. I try and tempt people like that and tell them, look, just do it for 3 weeks. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, because
mm-hmm.
It doesn't take that long to feel the positive effects.
No, I mean, if you do it right, it shouldn't even take 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 days should probably do the trick. But, you know, people are wed in their ways, and it's a very tricky thing when you get into trying to get other people to change, you know, particularly when they're not ready to or not interested in changing.
Yes, and that's many people.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, I've read Brendan Brazier's books. I know him. I've interviewed
mm-hmm.
him. And he talks about how plant food foods are easier to digest, and what ultimately happens is you, as an athlete, you recover a lot faster between workouts, so you can work more frequently and then get stronger. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it boils down to two things. The first is nutritional density, and the second is alkalinity. And when you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, your foods tend to be much more nutrition dense than a lot of the empty calories that you get when you're eating a lot of processed foods and milk and dairy and the like, which are more difficult to digest. So when you're eating your foods, the more easily digestible they are, the more nutrient dense they are, the more easily assimilated the nutrients are into your body without having to output a lot of energy to digest the food, which of course makes you tired. So you're able to feel better and have good, strong, consistent energy throughout the day without those ebbs and flows that you get, you know, that food coma that comes after eating a big lunch or what have you. And the other thing, and Brendan talks about this a lot as well, is alkalinity. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that the vast majority of the standard American diet, when combined with environmental toxins and the stressors of our daily life, contribute to what's called a state of chronic acidosis. And that's when your body is constantly striving to maintain essentially a neutral pH, combating this, you know, constant barrage of acids that you're putting into your body to make it more alkaline. And that ends up leaching precious nutrients from your bones and all sorts of terrible things, and creates an environment that's rife for getting sick and the onset of, you know, a number of congenital diseases. So when you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, it's primarily alkaline forming. And in this environment, you're much less likely to get sick. Your immune system is operating at its optimum functionality, and it's anti-inflammatory. So the sort of physical response to exercise-induced stress is minimized by this anti-inflammatory response. And what that means is your body's able to bounce back more quickly. So it's not that eating a plant-based diet inherently makes you a better athlete, but it keeps you healthy, it keeps you from getting sick, and it allows your body to repair itself more rapidly in between workouts. So when you protract that out over the course of the season, you're going to realize greater performance gains.
When I was asking you before, why did you choose vegetarian and vegan diets, and you were explaining why, I was thinking that I think it's easier when you have something that's black and white. I think it's harder when you have a diet that says you can eat a certain amount of something and not go and have more than that. It's really confusing for people, but when you say you can't eat that and you can eat this,
right,
it makes it a lot simpler.
It's a lot more simple, yeah, to sort of conceptualize, like I said. And also what it does is it helps break the craving cycle. So, you know, cravings are real and cravings are powerful. And, you know, look, if we didn't have cravings for bad food, then people would eat healthy all the time, right? So the best way to break that craving cycle is to remove that product from your diet. So if you're on a protocol where you're allowed a cheat day once a week, or you're allowed to eat a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you're never breaking the chain. You're never going to be free from that craving cycle. And, you know, what I found is that if you can survive the couple weeks of, you know, cleansing yourself from the dairy and the meat and the processed foods, that once you put a little distance between yourself and those items, you don't think about them anymore. You don't crave them on a daily basis. So, you know, maybe a craving will come every once in a while, but it's at a very low boil, and it doesn't become an overpowering thing that compels you to make an unhealthy food choice. But you have to break the cycle.
Now, I found your book very inspirational, and I don't ever intend on doing the things that you've done. But it did make me want to work out.
Well, the book only appealed to people that wanted to do crazy endurance races. I don't think I would sell very many books.
Mm-hmm. But what it told me, and there was a line in here somewhere, and I didn't dog ear it, but it was something about we only use 40% of our bodies, or we have a lot more when we think we don't, something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the quote, if I recall correctly, is that when we think we're at our absolute limit and can't go any further, we've actually only tapped into about 40% of what we're actually capable of. And, you know, if the book and the story is about anything, it's about the incredible resiliency and capacity and potential for the human body. You know, it's unbelievable to me to this day that I could have abused it as long as I did with drugs and alcohol and fast food and, you know, terrible eating and living habits, and then have it come back to life in the way that it has and perform at a level that it has is, you know, I still have trouble, you know, believing that what has happened has happened. And it's not me. It's actually understanding that the human body is an amazing thing. And when that's combined with a healthy state of mind and a healthy diet and the like, that your potential is untapped. And so, you know, the book, if you can just give me another minute here, I would say that, you know, on a surface level, it's about a guy who's, you know, unhealthy, overweight, and, you know, gets back together and goes and does these crazy endurance races that nobody else is going to do. And yeah, it is about that. But really what it's about is, you know, these endurance events are really intended as a metaphor, because I think everybody has sort of that dream deferred or that challenge they wanted, whether it's athletic or something completely different, that just gets cast aside in the course of our busy lives. And really the book is a call to action to, you know, tap into yourself and figure out what that thing is that you always wanted to do and start, you know, making some changes in your life to make it happen.
Yeah, well, I definitely got that, and I really enjoyed reading it. I was going to... I just for anyway, it was just so powerful to see what the body could do, and we have to remember that, because so many people are afraid. You mentioned fear before, and we're afraid, and we think we can't do things with our bodies, and also how forgiving the body can be. We can beat on it for decades and do horrible things to it, and then if we turn around and nourish it, it heals, it can get strong, and your story is so good at letting people know that they really can clean up their act. You know, some people, they go on a diet and then they cheat and they feel like, oh, what's the point? But the point is the body is forgiving and can heal.
Right.
Yeah.
It's more forgiving than the human mind. Like, you'll beat yourself up over a bad choice, and the body will forgive you if you just start treating it right again.
Yeah, and the mind is so powerful and can push us to do so many things beyond what we believe is possible. So thanks for showing us that. And thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food, Finding Ultra.
Thanks so much for having me.
And your website is richroll.com, and you also sell a number of products that kind of assist if people are interested in endurance and athletic training.
Yep, absolutely. We have a cookbook, and I also have an athletic recovery product, and you can find those at jailifestyle.com, jailifestyle.com. And for anyone who wants to follow me online, I'm always on Twitter, and I'm just at Rich Roll.
Great. Thank you, Rich. Thank you so much for joining
me.
It's All About Food.
Hi. Right.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Please visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me emails at info@realmeals.org, and have a delicious week. Bye-bye.